Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. It is Sunday. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have my intrepid and, as usual, wonderful co-host, Mr. Chris Sheridan. How you doing, sir?
Mr. Jason, I'm doing fine. And it's
Mr. Jason. I like that.
Mr. Jason. Yeah.
It's like the way they'd refer to you at a really fancy hotel in an old movie. You know, you're not your last name. You're Mr. Chris. Mr. Chris. What can I get you, Mr. Chris?
Mr. Chris. Yes.
So there you go. That's where we're at.
Okay. Yeah, it's the formality. We're going all formalities.
Why not?
Well, you know, I mean, why not have a title? Why not have a
indeed,
you know, sir or duke or I go with your magnificence.
Your magnificence. That's the one
I prefer. Not everyone's on board with that yet. I'm surprised. But...
Keep working on that. keep pushing for that. One of these days, they're gonna fall into line. Believe me.
Yeah.
All right. So today we are continuing our second part of the Hermetic Marriage, Manly Hall's wonderful little pamphlet that we went into. We started it last week. And the full title of this is The Hermetic Marriage, Being a Study in the Philosophy of the Thrice Greatest Hermes by Manly P. Hall. So go back and check that out if you haven't listened to that one yet. It's not necessary. You know, we're going to get into some of the finer points of it, but we're going to get into some different material today. So, but it is nice because we do contextualize kind of a little bit of the history of Hermetic thought and so on. And it kind of give you a little better idea of, you know, where this is coming from. But today we're going to be looking at Hermetic philosophy in myths and fairy tales, essentially, and looking at some of those ideas, some of the principles contained in these ideas, these Hermetic ideas that are contained in these stories and so forth. And that's going to be the format of the show today. So I'm going to hand it over to Chris in a second. He's got the structure of this thing, and he's going to kind of run with it today. So. But I just want to thank everyone who's listening. Thank you for showing up and supporting us each week and listening to the show on Sunday and also our Friday show, our Emmett Fox Friday show. We appreciate you guys listening to that and supporting that as well. So thanks again for that. You can check us out at cosmiceye.org or chrissheridan.com. And both our books are available through either of those sites. Well, not either, but Chris's is on his site and mine is on cosmiceye.org or through Amazon. Chris has... his book, The Spirit in the Sky by Chris Sheridan. And I highly encourage you guys to check that out. Excellent book. And it will inspire you and give you some new knowledge. My book is If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. And again, those are both available on Amazon or on those websites. So, Chris, why don't you go ahead and take it from the top?
I will. That's a great place to take it.
You like that? Take it from the top.
Yeah, take it from the top. A one and a two and a,
there you go.
You awakened my inner Lawrence.
I was just going to say, you really brought me back there. I remember my grandma watching that show on PBS back in the day.
She thanks. That, that was my favorite show.
You know? I'm sure it was.
And your grandma's. So yeah, we watch it together.
You guys, watch what you're saying about my grandma, sir.
Okay. May she young rest. And old.
Yes.
Children at heart of all ages.
Children at heart of all ages. release the bubbles.
Well, speaking of
bubbles,
are you a good witch or a bad witch? And children, fairy stories. This is a nice segue into chapter 3 of the Hermetic Marriage, the Hermetic philosophy in myths and fairy stories. And we're going to kind of combine part 3 and part 4, which is the love stories of the gods. So these are myths and fairy stories that also show this Hermetic marriage that we talked about last week, the union of the sun and the moon and alchemy. It was the gold and the silver, the head and the heart, this great archetypal connection, the yin and yang of Taoism, that you need both. Both need to be in harmony with each other to have a complete and total life. And that's the Hermetic marriage. That's basically the Hermetic philosophy in a very short telling. And it comes up, like I said, the ones I already mentioned with, you know, we talked about last week with alchemy and Taoism. Here we're going to use a couple fairy tales and a love story from the gods and goddesses of Greece to go through this and maybe explore even further this hermetic marriage. And I have something.
No, go ahead. Okay. I was, but it's okay. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I completed my thought.
Okay. Well, let me just pop in then real quick. Cause I wanted to say, so this principle, this idea is related to the principle of polarity, obviously the masculine and feminine energies. And as Chris said, the yin yang, these principles, by the way, can be found. These hermetic principles can be found in two places that are really great reading. I wanted to just kind of point these out before I forget. One is in the Divine Pymander or Pymander, Pymander. And there's multiple versions of that floating around on the internet. And it's listed by Hermes Mercurius Trismegistus. The cool one that I like is the blue one by Yogi Publication Society. That's kind of a nice little bound version of that. It's hardbound, and you can get them pretty cheaply on Amazon. The other one is this another work called The Kybalion, Kybalion. And both of these books deal with these hermetic principles. We're getting into only one of the principles, really, this kind of masculine feminine thing and the balance, polarity of opposites and the balancing thereof. But there's multiple different principles that are in this philosophy that go beyond the scope of what we're talking about today. So I would recommend those two books. Mm-hmm. And we may have.
And the law of attraction would be one of them. Mm-hmm. Law of correspondence, as above, so below. Mm-hmm. I think we've mentioned.
We've talked about that one, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that's.
We're talking about love today.
We're talking about love indeed, and we're talking about masculine and feminine energies and all that business. So go on. Go on, my friend.
So, and that's a great way to look at this connection, because it seems kind of dry and cold when you're talking about, well, this metal combining with this metal, or it's abstract like heaven and earth or something, but it's also a love story. It's a romance, and like any other romance, there can be difficulties between these two polarities, but they have to be brought together, and they both have to be operating. You can even think of electricity. There's the positive and the negative poles of an electric circuit, but they both have to be connected, or there's no circuit and the thing doesn't work. So that's what we're getting at here. And these tales, these love tales from fairy tales, are Beauty and the Beast, as well as Sleeping Beauty. There's a beauty theme going on here. And let me just talk for a second about, really the function of myth. Like, why would you have a fairy tale, or a myth? I mean, they're interesting and they take you away, but they also tell us something about ourselves and how to live and how to maybe approach some of the different stages and conditions we face in life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, and also the folk tales, fairy tales, and mythological stories also serve to, carry forward some of these ancient ideas in times where those ancient ideas were considered heretical to the church and so forth. So that's another function of these myths, is to sort of hide the ancient wisdom in them. And ideas that are more, that are at the time considered somewhat subversive. So that's kind of one of their functions as well. But you're right. It's like mainly, they're telling us stories about ourselves and our own internal psychic life and life in, as we know it on Earth. But they, they tell it in ways that are dramatic and have these sort of archetypal characters that we see. And, we'll look at these stories as being something maybe outside of ourselves or just a quaint fantasy or something. But what's really going on in these stories is the wisdom of the ages being told to you in a simplified form that's telling you how to kind of transmute the soul, how to sort of spiritualize matter, in essence. I mean, that's what these things are about, and at least these particular ones we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm. And it brings these opposites together. And these are, of course, told in a male and a female. It's some version of Prince Charming and Princess Beautiful that have to go through obstacles to get together, but they're neither one are whole until they can come together. So this first one is Beauty and the Beast. There's Disney versions of it. There's very dark versions of it that even in modern tellings. But essentially, the guy, the man, has been turned into a beast. and has lost his benevolent self. He's lost touch with the better part of a man or a person, and has become this hideous monster. I think under a spell. I don't really know the story particularly because I think it's told several ways, mm-hmm. but however it has come about. But the other character, the beauty character, is this, more feminine nature that is benevolent, that is caring, that has a redeeming quality that can rescue, because I guess she senses in him that it's still there. Mm-hmm. the gentleman is within the beast, there's still some part of it. So she serves this rescuing function that something of beauty and of benevolence and of compassion puts a whole different spin on something that may just be knowledge or skill or activity. Then you're doing the thing that you're doing in, the right way, or a way that helps more people. There has to be, and there's even in other myths, there's the face that launched 1,000 ships. Or you live in Vegas, somebody's at the crap tables and baby needs a new pair of shoes and throws the dice.
Yeah.
It's like, guys kind of as a group, we probably wouldn't get much done if it wasn't for women.
Yeah.
We didn't, and I'm talking this not in a gender sense, but in a
no, that's a gender sense.
In archetypal dynamic, and that too, and it's historically. Yeah. Whoever historically wears the hat,
for sure.
In the family is fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But it has to be, inspired by that. Otherwise it probably we're too lazy or something.
Yeah.
You never finish project. So we need that to, for action, but it's also action that's done, in a much better way.
Mm-hmm.
Than if it were left to its own devices or just run on power, or greed, or it could become greed.
Yeah, exactly. I think
without this, opposing but very dynamic force.
Well, that balancing energy, right? And so I think it's getting at, Beast is this kind of gruff, angry, sort of ferocious, scary creature at this point. And he's holed up in his castle and he doesn't want to leave. And, he's enchanted and stuck there and so forth. I think that represents kind of this idea of this kind of masculine energy gone wild without the balancing power of the feminine in there. It's like if you looked at it, it would be like, when, for example, when corporations, go nuts and their only sole motive is profit and they don't care who they hurt and, they're not really interested in the environment and they're not interested in, the psychological or social implications of the work that they're doing and whether or not they're poisoning things. And so, they've gone into beast mode, as it were, and not in a good way, like when you're working out,
mm-hmm.
but into like this beast mode where you're not balancing that out with the heart. You're not balancing out with any kind of emotional content or feelings or fine, sort of fine thought in terms of how things are interrelated. And all that has traditionally, in the past, obviously been sort of symbolized by these feminine qualities, these more maternal qualities and the connectedness, the interconnected nature of things, the nurturing. All those were qualities that people considered motherly and feminine and so forth, in this classical sort of symbolism. Right. So you need that balance between the two. And so it becomes Belle, who's beauty, who brings that to him by, her love and her compassion towards him and her perseverance in dealing with his gruffness and so forth, as well, as you see when the story unfolds.
Oh, make no mistake, on the feminine side, this beauty and compassion and love and so on.
Yeah.
It's not a weak force.
No, it has
a
very tough, it has a very tough is, nature to
it's
it.
It's incredibly strong. Yeah. Yes.
But like water, it's yielding, but at the same time, it's like powerful. It's immensely powerful. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point.
Well, they're both powerful and they need to have their powers, balanced, these two archetypes. And I think you mentioned something about Belle being a rose in a thorny bush.
Was that in this or was that in Sleeping Beauty?
Maybe that was in Sleeping
I think
Beauty.
That one's Sleeping
well,
Beauty.
Well, actually,
yeah.
that's where we're moving on
so,
to next.
Maybe so maybe you're naturally being attracted to the next step in this process.
I think so as well. So just to, you know, just to review, the beauty can rescue and redeem that which has gone beastly.
Yeah.
So what we have in Sleeping Beauty is another aspect, another way of telling this same dynamic and the importance of this marriage, but also maybe what the other role is, or another role mm-hmm. in this to play, in that in the heart of humans, man, women, anybody, we can bury some of our, like as we get older, maybe our innocence is lost, or some of these more childlike qualities, hope even, can get lost, and enthusiasm, and we might lose some of our sense of that, and just got to go to work, and well, it's just business, nothing personal. We can move away from that, and in this story of Sleeping Beauty, the beauty is still beauty. It is still this same power and compassionate love that was in Beauty and the Beast, but that's the part that has become dormant. It has been hidden. We see this in fairy tales. It's in the tower. It's somehow removed from the night. He has to rescue her. The dragon has her captivated. There's something separating her, which is so needed. This is the lifeblood of the, of the soul. But through spell, enchantment, different things. And this one uses the sleeping. That's a reason for the sleeping, because it's probably asleep more than it is like gone. Mm-hmm. So it needs to be awakened. It needs to be aroused. And that in this scenario and myths like it, it's the strength and the determination and really the single focus of Prince Charming. Or the knight in shining armor, whoever comes to the rescue, and whether it's the parents that have her in the tower, or the dragon that has her protected, or the spell of enchantment that has her locked away and asleep, and he has to go through the briars and the thorns, and there's a lot of forest imagery in this one to get to her, and in doing so, and with this kiss, this spark of inspiration, she's awakened once again, where she can be herself, just like the beast needed to become a better man. Mm-hmm. This beauty needs to be rescued from either just being lost along the way, or it's been overburdened by the troubles of everyday life, and your beauty has been somehow pushed down. So it's a different way of telling, another aspect of this this marriage.
Yeah, exactly. And so you see that sort of feminine aspect, that beauty aspect, that, that creativity, that sort of connection and loving feeling quality and so on is asleep. It's been put to sleep by a wicked queen. And then you see that the prince has to rescue that. So, they can also... The idea of this too is, one of the psychological Jungian aspects of this is that would be what would be called the anima in a man, which is the feminine side of a man that, traditionally needed to be sort of brought up to balance everything out. And then, of course, women have the opposite of that. They would have an animus, which would be like, it would be as if the, the prince were asleep. And she would, and then the princess were rescuing, the prince. That would be the animus within. So, and of course, this is symbolic stuff. But at any rate, my point to this is that he also points out, Manly Hall points out that the prince, as he's going through, you were talking about those briars and so on, that's like, the vicissitudes and challenges of life, and oftentimes life can kind of cut us and we get pricked by thorns and so on. And that's the, that's that sort of symbolic meaning behind that. And he says, and he very specifically says, peace will never be found without labor. So go with the faith of a true prince into the world, which is the forest of nettles, for the world's filled with aggravating, pricking, tearing, and wounding things. So, that's this brave quality that we've got to have in our lives to resurrect that feeling and that more feminine quality that kind of balances everything out, right?
It is. And he says, there is beauty in all things. If your life has been deprived of it, go forth like the prince and claim it. but you also may have to go through the forest of thorns and also gain the spirit of a hero. Mm-hmm. You know, this takes something else for the prince, you know, in Sleeping Beauty, as well as Beauty mm-hmm. and the Beast. It takes it's a major force of power, maybe beyond, you know, normal human experience. Yeah. To really be that force, and that, you know, to either rescue one or to redeem the other, it's a heroic act.
It's a heroic act indeed.
Yeah. It's not an ordinary, you know, task.
No,
and that's why all these great stories. I mean, it's the quest. It's you have to, you know, climb the mountain. You have to, you know, go in the cave. You have to do all mm-hmm. these things, and you know, nowhere further would one have to go than hell to rescue this beauty than our friend Orpheus. And I guess we'll be coming up in the next story when we get to
get to that. Let me say this first, though. You know, this is where this gets back to this idea of this hermetic marriage, you know, which you mentioned at the beginning. You know, we talked about in the other show, it's like the marriage of the sun and the moon, melting together of the gold and the silver and all these different sort of alchemical and symbolic sort of representations of this thing. But, you know, in these stories, they're literally getting married at the end of the story, these characters also. And so it's representing that those opposites coming together, the polarity is being balanced out. And then they're, you know, in a sense, what's happening is those two are turning into a sort of a yin and yang symbol together, right? The Tai Chi symbol. And as in their merging, in their marriage, their hermetic marriage. You know what I mean?
Well, and then they become something in a way, each one of them becomes something wholly different than what they were in this.
Exactly. Game.
Instead of Beauty and the Beast, it's the beauty.
There you
beast.
Go. Yeah.
I guess he's not so beastly at the end.
Well, Prince Charming. You know, what's interesting about that one though, that, you know, it's interesting. Those two stories. So, you know, you see Beauty taking, in a sense, Belle, you know, the beauty in this case, she's a more active feminine role in a sense. You know, whereas like in this Prince Charming story, it's like you said, you know, the prince is rescuing this maiden, the princess, who's under this spell. You're right. Those two things are the opposite story. So in a sense, like you could look at these in, you know, in different lights, because like every, you know, the thing about this, that's interesting about these stories is, you know, obviously traditionally men have a certain role in society, and traditionally women had a certain role in society, and all that has changed, you know, in this time that we live in. So, you know, you might find yourself as a woman having really, you know, sort of active masculine qualities because, you know, you went to school and excelled in that, or maybe you excelled in sports and then went into the corporate world and really killed it there and stuff. So, you know, women may find themselves needing to resurrect some of these feminine qualities in themselves. Men, for example, may, you know, have taken a more interior kind of life now and may have more quote unquote feminine qualities within them. And then they may need to resuscitate more of the masculine energy. So this is where these, you know, these tales, like you're saying, they do go beyond gender now. Traditionally, when these tales were told, there were very clear roles for people. Now, you know, you've got to look at this in, you know, somewhat more symbolically, but they do still hold in some ways traditionally, you know, certain people live more traditional roles, right? Mm-hmm. But this is where we've got to look at these things, and we'll talk about this more at the end of the show, but this is where you got to look at these things and kind of look at your own situation, your own development in terms of those masculine and feminine energies, and see what you need to rescue, right? Mm-hmm. So, because it's going
to
be different.
Well, a lot of times we have to be both.
Yeah, for sure.
Take the, you know, the single mom, you know, generations now. It's not just one that they've had to be the breadwinner, and they've had to be the nurturing mm-hmm. mother, you know, literally, you know, wearing both hats. That was traditionally with a man and a woman. And what happens is both kind of lose.
Yeah.
In that they don't get to fully develop maybe some of the feminine things. But also maybe, have to develop some masculine-ish mm-hmm. things, but maybe not even get the best of those either.
Yeah, yeah. It's tough.
So,
it's tough.
Yeah, I think we yeah. both need to get in. We all need to get in touch with in trans. It really doesn't matter what, we're in the shade of gray or the rainbow hue. You think of gender, it's the role. It's the yeah. act. It's the head and the heart, really, if you want to get the masculine and the feminine, within mm-hmm. each one of us. And like you said, in the Jungian, the animus and the anima, that we have whatever gender we identify as, we also have the other archetypal yin and yang within us.
It's about the balancing yeah.
and getting the best mm-hmm. of both. And what happens is when one is being on its best behavior, it is naturally bringing out the best mm-hmm. in the other. The more the other can be its true self, the more it powerful it is and able to help the other. So it's a kind of a both lifting each other up, and that's what a true union should be. It should both should be stronger, both should be better by making themselves better and making each other a better fit.
Yeah, but both in the relationship world and within oneself, right? Yeah, absolutely. Good point. Absolutely. And speaking of relationships, let's talk Orpheus and Eurydice. You were moving in that direction and I interrupted you, so let us get into that one.
Okay, this from Greek mythology. Orpheus, was Orpheus the son of Apollo?
I believe that's correct. That sounds correct to me.
I'm putting that in the question because I, check me on the work, but really we're focusing on the relationship. So he had, again, has, divine and this princess and the prince, they already come from some archetypal king and queen mm-hmm. lineage anyway. So it's a little easier, clearer to see these, who these people are. And Orpheus, I guess through Apollo, was the greatest musician ever. People would follow his feet.
And poet.
Mesmerized.
Yeah.
And poet, yeah. And really the music and the muse and the prose and having this great skill with words and with the lyre, mm-hmm. the instrument, and great ability to play was also matched with the inspiration and the why he wants to do it, the love of the music, what's behind the words, what, otherwise the notes would just be empty without this inspirational force, playing with feeling. You can get a computer to play any kind of note you want on a synth guitar or piano or something like that, and it's in perfect time and perfect pitch every time. But you might not groove to it. It might not, it just doesn't have that feeling. It doesn't have, oh yeah, that's got some heart.
Yeah.
A bunch of words are just a bunch of words, but you can see the heart, in there. So he had this, and his wife Eurydice, just adored her, loved her. And it was they kind of started out, I guess, in this story. We're jumping in the story where they're already together. We already have this union. So this is, again, looking at the same story in another telling, in another way. So having this, Eurydice is, enamored and, a great partner for Orpheus. And Orpheus is doing the best of both. He has the heart through her and he has the skill through his own being. And the masses love it. It's great for everybody. It's a win all the way around until she gets bitten by a snake and dies and is taken to the underworld. And I'm speeding things up. But what happens is without her, he would play and he would play the same songs with the same notes, but it wasn't the same. And nobody liked it. He didn't like it. He wept. He wept for her. He knew at some point that he was going to have to go down to the underworld and rescue her. And he does. And we see this in a lot of going to the underworld, going to hell, going to Hades, seeking out Pluto to rescue something that's been brought down there. But anyway, it's a common theme to go down and rescue yes. something from the underworld. Again, it's sleeping or it's trapped, or it's in jail, or it's in a cave.
And it's generally feminine.
At the entrance.
Which deals with soul, yes, feeling, yes, and all those things we've been talking about, right?
And you have to go in a deep, dark place to get it. Yeah. That's where it often gets hidden. So there's this three-headed dog, Cerebrus, which might be familiar to anybody who knows Harry Potter. I think that came up in at least one. Hercules had to, in one of his labors, he had to get through this gatekeeper, and it really keeps you from going down there because it's not for everybody. And in the case of Orpheus, he was able to play. He still had enough heart because it was his soul's longing, his needing to recover what had been lost, that drew him down, there to get on this quest and rescue her. So he lulls the three-headed dog gatekeeper to sleep with his music and goes down and basically makes a deal with Pluto, and that he would release Eurydice. He could take her back to the surface under one condition: if on the way back, he would lead the way and she would follow, but he was not allowed to look back. This "don't look back." It comes up in music a lot. I think Bob Dylan and Boston, some other bands, it's, "don't look back" theme. And that's where it comes from mythologically and in music, is this "don't look back." It's kind of trusting. So there's a lesson in that, that as he comes to the surface and he believes she's behind him, can't see her, can't hear her. But as he's very close to the goal, he does turn back and he just gets a glimpse of her kind of disintegrating, falling backwards back into the underworld. And to make a short story endless, he gets back on the surface. He still tries to play. Not only do people not like it, he goes off on this to this island, and the inhabitants there end up
destroying. They end up cutting his head off, don't they, and floating it down the river?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it
was a tough ending for him.
It wasn't, they just didn't like his music. It was a terrible ending. Still had all the skill. Still had every single bit of the skill, but didn't have the inspiration. So this is another telling of the importance of how...
Well, think of that symbol, though, the cutting his head off. I mean, he's all in his head. He doesn't have any of the heart part of it, And they throw that in the river. He had too much head in his head.
Let me read this little section,
if I may, that we talked about before the show. So this is Manly Hall kind of summing this up. It says, "All things in nature are at their summum bonum when each quality complements every other. Reason, logic, philosophy, courage, daring, even aspiration are the masculine qualities or factors. They lend strength to accomplishment, but they are incomplete unless there is added to them inspiration, intuition, grace, beauty, faith, and love, either love of labor or the spirit behind labor." So really, I mean, that's what he's talking about. When those two things are hand in hand, that's the king and the queen, that's the hermetic marriage, that's the sun and the moon working together, that's the heart and the mind, like you talked about. This is what we're talking about.
Well, it's science and ethics. You if you want to something bring modern, into something yeah. we face every day.
Yeah.
Can we split the atom? Sure, let's make a bond.
Should we split the atom? Maybe that's another story. Yeah.
How do we split the atom? And I'm going to try as hard as I can to do it. But it's not guided by, and maybe later on you can say, well, atomic maybe power for electricity or atomic medicine, for diagnostics and things like that. May have a little more of a benevolent, more ethical, use of this power.
Scientific
thing. That's why that's really important to have in politics, in business, in science, in all these things. Wall Street. I mean, it's just how much more money can we make? It's like, well, and you were talking about businesses, like there is this phenomenon now, which is great, this buy one, give one paradigm where it's a sock or a shoe or something, well, a pair that gets...
Wait, you get the pair, you don't just get the one shoe. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I know. We're repairing these shoes need to be paired together. They're
That's set. Good to know.
Again, that we're talking about this pair. It's the left and the right, the harmony. You know, we're out
if
of
we
black.
Only send if we, one
you
shoe.
Know,
we're
of
just...
course, you know, my friends who are amputees, you know, get the, well, they still wear shoes anyway. In their
aesthetic, so good point, Chris. Good point.
Yeah.
Well, right. Let's be inclusive. Let's be inclusive. I like that.
Oh, well, no, I think they would particularly laugh at this. I know one would. But, you know, that having this, you know, ethical thing that, you know, yes, you're buying a pair of shoes and you made a commercial capitalist transaction. And yes, the company's making money. And guess what? Somebody else is getting a free pair of shoes.
Yeah. No, it's exactly. Like, yeah,
I mean, how cool is that?
That's a great example.
There, I think, is a little more balanced. But it doesn't deny the other, though. The company can still make $1 million, and you can still spend, you know, $50 or more on a pair of shoes, but you're not really going to have the guilt because you know someone else is getting shoes. And, you know, or there's, you know, some companies that, you know, raised even the base workers' salary to a certain living wage. And, you know, and that can do it. So there's,
there's movement in that direction, isn't there?
You know what I mean? And there, you know, there really needs to be more of that.
Good point, though. Very practical.
Let's talk. Well, and there's also the personal. Yeah. As you were saying,
I was just going to say, since we are getting towards the end, let's start to talk a little bit about, that's kind of one way of practical application. You know, at the end of the show, we usually like to talk about how can we put this to use? How can we wrestle with this material in our own lives and stuff like that? Let's talk about that a little bit. So you brought up one good thing. Business is a great place where that can happen. So we see how capitalism is maybe, you know, a little focused on profit at all costs and so on, you know, it needs the heart to balance it out. And you brought up a good point of some of these companies that are starting to make more ethical choices and be, you know, they have this now too, this, new form of business called a B corporation, where it's kind of a mix between a nonprofit and a regular corporation. And it doesn't have the constraints that a corporation has. One of the reasons why corporations are so ruthless, unfortunately, is that they're, you know, they're set up, especially the ones that have shareholders. You know, you're bound by law to maximize profit and minimize costs. So that you're breaking the law if you're actually trying to do things more ethically at times. And so, you know, and you've probably seen that documentary about corporations, what is it called? Maybe called The Corporation or something like that. But it talks about how if a corporation were a human being, it would look like a sociopath, basically. And unfortunately, you know, those laws are in place that make it that way. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I do, but the grand irony is that a corporation, corpus, it's the body. And when you have a corporation, it has, some people believe that it has the rights of a person. That's corporation.
Entity,
thing, but it's,
it's
a really pretty diabolical when you think about it.
And it's like, well, that's the... But, you know, when, and I'm not, you know, impugning all corporations because some of them have noble motives, but, you know, if it's set up though with, you know, this idea of profit at all costs, constant growth, you know, a sort of disregard for, you know, the social implications, the psychological implications of what they're doing, the ecological impact of what they're doing and so on, then, you know, then they're disconnected from the heart part of it. It's all about thinking. This sounds like a good idea. This is the theory. This should be a good idea. But in practice, a lot of people are being harmed, unfortunately, and the earth's being harmed and so on, because it's without that heart factor. And if we were, you know, if we're able to put that back in, like I said, like within some of these things, these new forms of business and these new ways of doing things, you can have that head and heart working together. You can have that hermetic marriage and business, you know? And so, Let's talk a little bit though on a personal level. Talk a little bit about how people can wrestle with some of this stuff in their own lives and how they might be able to try to find this balance in their own life. Where would you start? Maybe reading some of these fairy tales and starting to like become familiar with some of this material again in a new way? That would probably be helpful, right?
Well, it would be. And well, where do I start? Which one do I read? Start anywhere, and anyone that you read or maybe see a movie or something that resonates with you, that somehow you connect with the character, the story, or something that's going on. That's why there's so many different ones and different ways, because there's people look at things in different ways. And but I think there's something in that, though. If you do connect with some material that resonates with you, or something, bring one back from childhood that, you know, I always like that one. It means there's something in it for you, and try to draw more out of that. And I think you could almost pick any one, or start with any one, and see how far you can get with that. You know, some might do better for, you know, other people or other things that you want to look at. But first of all, I think you read that paragraph, and it's good to kind of reiterate what these two aspects are in ourselves. You know, the story out there is the myth that actually shows us. It's
exactly.
The projection, you know, in a movie, it's literally a projection that we can see out here. What we can't really see, because these are invisible forces, but they play out visibly in the world. And I would use movies. I think there's some great movies. Like Casablanca, that's a tale of redemption. It was a broken man at the beginning that, stuck his neck out for no one. And at the end, he risked it all for the girl that broke his heart. I mean,
that's the classic fairy tale. Yeah.
If that's not a redemptive power, and Ilsa is, the princess, and he did not wind up with her. And those two did not live happily ever after.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they did, but not together. So it was, unconditional love.
Well, it's a higher spiritual love. It's not just the romance love. It's a higher spiritual love. He's learning that lesson. Yeah. You know, and I think you hit on a good point. You've got to see these characters as parts of yourself. The characters out there are parts of you in here. You know, think about that as you're watching those tales, and think about how those play out in your own life. You know, you've got a princess in there. You've got a king in there. You've got a prince. You've got a sort of trickster figure in there, and all these different characters you'll see. You know, we're focusing on the king and queen, on the prince and princess, on Beauty and the Beast, and, you know, this sort of pair of opposites, in essence, that are trying to be brought together. But there's a whole host of these other characters in these different stories. But generally speaking, in almost any of these fairy tales, you're right, you're going to see this theme of this hermetic marriage idea playing itself out in one way or another, no matter how many characters there are. There's going to be a love story in there in some fashion or another, and someone's being rescued in some fashion or another in any of these tales. So, and let me, right?
Rescued and redeemed.
Transformed and balanced.
And even in an actual love story movie, usually it's boy meets girl, boy loses girl, and then boy wins girl over. There's something that, comes, they both have to change to some degree.
Absolutely. And another thing to look at in these stories, whether you're reading these fairy tales or myths, and I'd highly recommend any of the old Disney movies, the old Disney. And I mean like the 30s and 40s Disney, so you're talking about Snow White, you're talking about Sleeping Beauty, you're talking about, or some of the other ones they had, they did almost all these myths, Pinocchio, the real classic old school Disney. They're not exactly the story, but they're pretty darn close. And, a lot of them left in even some of the scarier elements in the fairy tales in the old Disney, But even some of the newer stuff, Lion King and some of these stories stick to this mythological pattern too. So you can watch any of those. But you're right. Even in things like Top Gun and some of these classic, Rocky, some of these classic stories, even these different love stories. A lot of the tales that have, female protagonists and so on, those things are, they're mythological in scope. Watch though, this is one thing I think that would help. Watch the characters that really, really push your buttons, the ones you really don't like. And you're going to find in those that there's something you need to look at within yourself, because that's what you would call a projection. And usually that's something in the shadow. And usually it's something about yourself that you don't like or you don't want to own. So the characters that really piss you off in those things are the ones that you're going to want to look at. Like, who in me is like that character, or what in me is like that character that I need to really take a serious look at. You know what I mean? And that's that shadow work. And you can really do this. So if it's the masculine character, then you need to look and say, okay, well, what is it about this that's really making me angry? If it's the feminine character, what is it that's really pushing your buttons? You know what I'm saying? And you can kind of get at...
Well, it could be the antagonist. It could even be I know it's a different type of love story, but you know, it could be something in the evil character that mm-hmm. needs to be conquered. That could
yeah,
be
for sure.
Part in you too, another archetypal thing. But it's this balance between the head and the heart. And just to kind of review what you had quoted from Mainly Hall, reason, logic, philosophy, courage, daring, aspiration are more mm-hmm. of the masculine qualities,
yeah.
which we can all have and we all need. You know, the head. And then added to them, inspiration, intuition, grace, beauty, faith, and love, compassion. Those are more of the feminine or the more heart capacities. So when working with ourselves, you know, am I doing this? You can ask questions, but basically, here's how I have aligned this, that in the head or the masculine, using these archetypes, it's what am I doing and how do I do it? That's one way of looking at that. And the feminine would say, or the heart mm-hmm. would say, why am I doing this? And how am I going about it?
Yeah.
Not how to do something like an instruction.
But it's a value question, isn't it? It's like, is this worth doing? Mm-hmm. And what's the end result in terms of, you know, the value of it for all involved and things like that. So it's taking a bigger view of it than whether or not, you know, not just how to do it, but what is going to be the result of this if we do it, and is it good for us? Is it bad for us? You know what I mean?
And that's the romance, mm-hmm. that's the love story within each and one of us. We have to, and we will be better lovers and have a better love story in our human partners and outer experience when we get this better too within. As a matter of fact, that's probably needs to happen maybe at the head of the head of the line. But to ask those questions, and the flip side is true. Say if you have, you know, a lot of feeling and it's like, I must do something to help this group of people that's underrepresented. And I know that it'll be better for them and their children if they have a hand up. And I want to do it in a way that doesn't hurt anybody or has a low impact on the environment. And okay, mm-hmm. those are hard things, those are feeling things, those are great. And those can activate mm-hmm. the head to do something, but then that has to step in and say, okay, now what specifically can I do to serve to serve the
exactly.
queen, you know, as it were, you know, for God and country, but it's, you know, yes, my queen, you know, the knight goes off on the quest or the
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
task to do this thing or find this thing, and then he has to figure out, you know, how he's going to go about it and everything, but it's why you do it and the manner in which, you know, it's going to take place.
Yeah, and then
without
harm, and then that exactly, and then that sort of masculine energy that's going out there and having to actually sort of you know, sort of execute the actual, you know, material work and, you know, create this kind of structure and do all these things. And, you know, then that has to balance itself out, like you said, with the idealized ideas behind it. You know, because in the real world, quote unquote, you know, you're going to run up against situations where it's sometimes impossible to achieve that perfect balance. So, you know, you're constantly weighing these things back and forth. You know, the value side of it, the heart side of it, the what, you know, versus the practical, logical, steps oriented side of it, right? So it has to be a constant dialogue, because, you know, sometimes one's going to weigh out over the other, and that's the challenge, is how you keep them balanced in the end, I think. And so you're never necessarily done in the exterior world. You may complete this, you know, this balance within yourself, but out in the world, when you're struggling with stuff, you know, it's a constant sort of dialogue. And that's what you got to keep it, a dialogue. You know, it's, they're not fighting against each other. And that's why, let me read this last paragraph, because I think Manly Hall really sums this up. We're looking at the external world and looking at like leadership and things like that, and how this plays out in the, you know, in the exterior world, because it is, like we said, it's this dialogue and this balance that has to exist. That's the ideal that you're trying to create. So what he says is, neither a matriarchy nor a patriarchy alone can ever rule the world wisely and well. But when these two join forces, then the affairs of the world will be run as wisely as those of the gods. Then the lords of compassion shall join with the lords of reason in molding the destiny of the universe. You know, that's the archetypal king and the archetypal queen there, working in tandem to rule, you know, and that's what we're talking about. And that's what this Hermetic marriage is. So hopefully that provides you some food for thought. The books of Robert Johnson and our podcast that we did way back on Robert Johnson's book, is a great place to check out some more of this kind of archetypal information if you're interested in it, as well as his books, She and We. It's all about what we've just been talking about in it from a Jungian standpoint, the ideas of relationship, the inner parts and so on, and really readable, fun, really deep books. But easy to read and short. So very punchy, really feeling oriented Jungian work, which is very rare. Most of it is from, you know, introverted thinking types who are, you know, who love to go on and on with a million mythological examples and so on. Robert Johnson's, it's just he's a breath of fresh air in terms of that material. So I highly recommend him. Any final parting thoughts, Chris?
Well, this Hermetic marriage ultimately is the one within. And this, I think we are divided, or we're at a conflict. Archetypally, you can see even in a comedy movie, somebody has, they're facing a decision, a moral decision perhaps, and a cartoon devil appears on one shoulder and says, yeah, man, do it. Come on, you know you want it. And then the angelic figure appears on the other shoulder. No, how could you possibly dream of doing something so mean? You know, we have this within us, and we know this. You know, it's not just skill, masculine, and beauty, feminine. You know, we have these maybe kind of good and bad things, because that is the value judgment. And we both inform the other. There's the heart mind, and there is, you know, a feeling thought.
Yeah.
Or a thoughtful feeling. That these are both going on, they're connected with each other, and they do, like the yin and the yang, they contain they already contain the one in the other, or the other in the one. And that's the gateway. Maybe that's where this connection can kind of, like, the, you know, the intelligence, the logic of my feeling heart can connect with the logic of my compassionate brain. You know, that these two really kind of come together. Yes, you know, we have to look at these separate things, but as they redeem and rescue and inform and support each other, they still maintain some of their, you know, individual aspects and qualities when they need to. But there's this part in the middle where they merge, and this union and the great alchemical drawings of, you know, the Middle Ages, it's shown often as a hermaphrodite, which is Hermes. We're talking about the Hermetic marriage, and Aphrodite, you know, of love. So that this becomes a, you know, either in a single human, either it has two heads, the king and the queen, you know, heads, or its body, you know, physically is shown as having, you know, hermaphroditic parts. It's this symbol that once this marriage takes place, there's a transformation and you really can't go back. You may still be the king on this one side, and you might still be the queen on this other side, but because those two are together, they're both transformed into something really wholly different than what they were.
Great point. At the beginning. Very good description as well of that process. Thank you. Thank you for providing that great structure and your words of wisdom today. I appreciate it.
Well, all from Manly Hall. And then, of course, the wise sages and storytellers from
indeed.
All ages and places.
Indeed.
Come to this.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us on this edition of the Cosmic Eye Show, where we spoke about Manly Hall's hermetic marriage. If you haven't heard the first part of this, go back and check it out. And like I said, check out our previous podcast way back at the beginning on Robert Johnson's He. I think you might get something out of that as well. Thanks for supporting us, all of our listeners who are supporting us. If you would care to make a donation, we would greatly appreciate it. It helps us out. It helps us get the show out there and spread this information, this ancient wisdom out there. That's at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. You can make a donation through there. Check us out at cosmiceye.org or at chrissheridan.com. And again, both of our books are The Spirit in the Sky. That's Chris's book. And mine is If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. Join us on Friday as well for our Emmett Fox show. Thanks again. Have a great week. We appreciate you guys. Goodbye and God bless.